Did I put the clothes in the dryer?
I hope they don't think I was
sleeping. I need to be awake.
Snacks.
I forgot
my brain shut
off.
Just sleep already.
When your racing thoughts keep you up at night, it's tough to let go and get the rest you need. Better sleep can help. You might have heard of white or brown noise. There's a whole rainbow of color noises, and they can help you calm your mind, reduce stress, and sleep better, like the green noise you're listening to now. With the Better Sleep app, you can discover more color noises and over 200 soothing sounds, guided meditations, and bedtime stories. High-quality rest is vital to your mental well-being and physical health. Calm your restless mind, conquer your day, and sleep better at night. Download Better Sleep from the App Store or Google Play and start a 7-day trial today. Because when you sleep better, you feel better.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Kiwi Talks. My guest today is a veteran environmental artist who's been in the video game industry for over 20 years. Long, long time. He's probably best known for his almost 11-year stint at Naughty Dog, working on franchises such as Uncharted and The Last of Us. I'd like to welcome Jeremy Huxley. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me, Reese.
Thanks for agreeing to do this. I wanted to start off with your early days at Naughty Dog, because you joined around about 2010, which would have been towards the end of Uncharted 3, so you're coming in near the end?
Actually, I think it was early, middle Uncharted 3, because they were finishing up some multiplayer when I interviewed for Uncharted 2, actually, even still.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, look, devving Last of Us 1. They had like a little side team doing that, even that early. I worked on Uncharted 3, I would say, from the middle of production to the end. Yeah.
Is that easy to do, to just come in partway through when the pipeline's already there and everybody's kind of already in their groove?
You know, surprisingly, like at the time, like the team was extremely welcoming. Like, I have so many mentors that just took me on at the time. I mean, I had been working on the Torchlight games and then Hellgate before that. Hellgate was slightly more realistic, but it was still stylized. But, like, the Torchlight games were hand-painted games. So I remember on the interview, my lead Tate was like, do you know ZBrush? I was like, yeah, definitely. So I had to learn for the art test, you know, and that got me the job. But I had a lot of learning to do. And we had, like, people like Baruz and Brian, who had worked on, like, Final Fantasy IX. Like, just crazy veterans of the industry that were just super awesome about just inviting me into the studio and taking me under their wing. You know, I was specialized in materials. For those that don't know, Naughty Dog usually works in pairs. Like, you'll have a modeler and a texture artist work together on most projects. I think it's still the same way. I've been away from the studio for about 4 or 5 years now, so it could be different. But basically, I focused on materials using ZBrush, like 2.5D functions. So that was like a new workflow that they developed at the time. It was pretty cutting edge for the time, really.
Was it slightly intimidating? Did you get any imposter syndrome when you were first there? Because obviously the caliber of Naughty Dog is so high, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it's funny, too, because, like, little did I know, there was, like, this internal feud between, like, they're using these two separate software where they're pushing for ZBrush, which is, like, a sculpting software, and this other software called, like, Crazy Bump.
Yeah.
And I had done my art test in Crazy Bump because I'd never used ZBrush before, really. You know, like on Torchlight, we were using like some Deep Paint, which is like old programs where you can basically hand paint things in 3D. Great for eliminating seams and stuff. ZBrush is kind of similar, but it's for sculpting and painting. So I was still learning that software. But I had done my my art test originally with Crazy Bump, and it turns out my soon-to-be lead hated Crazy Bump, so he hated the look of it. But he said that, you know, despite his hate for it, the fact that he he thought I still got a decent result. He gave me a second test to do it in ZBrush, and that's where I had to sort of learn. So I definitely sort of got it scrapped together for the art test, got the offer, and then on board, I basically had to learn from a ton of like ZBrush like veterans that were super amazing, and they had all kinds of crazy tools set up. They shared, I mean, like it was so awesome. Like they would share all their brushes, all their sculpts, everything, and a lot of them had been there for like. They had worked on like Jak and Daxter. Some had worked on like Crash Bandicoot. Like they've been there forever. When I started, I think it was around 140 or 50 people still. So the environment team was still maybe like the material team was maybe like, I don't know, anywhere from like 6 to 8 people. And then myself. Now it's like probably like 20 or 30 plus. I have no idea. So it was very close-knit studio, like a team at that time. And the environment team in particular, like, really had great leads. So I felt super, super welcome. And weirdly enough, you didn't get a ton of feedback unless something went wrong at the time. I remember specifically, like, this lady named Nicole sat across from me, and she was helping me sort of get used to the software. She'd been there for a while. Like, she worked on Uncharted 1 and 2, I believe. Left around 3. But she sat up to my first week, like, how'd it go? She's like, did anybody talk to you? I'm like, no. Just, you know, the team, she's like, okay, that's a good sign. So it's kind of like, you know, sink or swim. You usually know if something's not working, you know, because of the nature of games, you're constantly updating stuff. It's getting, you know, people can see it because they, you know, they get it through Perforce. So if it looks wrong, you'll know. So that was a good sign. I was making it. But well, that was through the help of a ton of amazing people at the time.
Yeah. So then how was it going to Uncharted 4? Because obviously... PS3 to PS4, the hardware is completely different. You've obviously got a lot more power, which is great for an environmental artist because you can do more with it. So how was that process?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because we shipped Uncharted 3, and then we did like a press tour, which was cool. We got to kind of go around in the U.S. and show the game. I got to go to New York with a guy named Ricky, which was cool. But right after that, people basically moved on to what was the prototype of Last of Us. Because I think at that point, Bruce had already shown that, sort of like that prototype at E3, I believe. Or maybe we didn't show it externally yet, but it was well on its way, Last of Us was. So most people moved directly on to Last of Us after Uncharted 3. If you recall, I think Last of Us 1 came out, and then Uncharted 4 came out afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that makes sense, obviously.
Because I wasn't sure if it was two separate teams, or there was overlap between two separate teams, or one was moving on to hardware while Last of Us was being wrapped up. I don't know. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, they've always tried to do two teams, but it's funny because like, I think we did Uncharted 3, and then there was just like maybe 10 of us that were on Uncharted 4 basically from the beginning. A lot of people moved on to Last of Us to sort of keep pushing that and ship it. Now, I actually requested not to be on Last of Us because it was just too dark for me. You know, I played Uncharted 2 and I loved the look of it. Like, I love the colors, the brightness, the humor. So I just said, hey, like, if possible, is there any chance I can work on prototyping? And they said, yeah. So I got put on basically Uncharted 4 the whole time.
That's cool.
Which was awesome because I'd never been at the beginning of a cycle like that, like a hardware cycle. Like, we were doing tests, like pushing the PS3 to its absolute limit. Like, we were doing early jungle look dev with like really dense foliage on the PS3. It was running at like 2 or 3 frames a second and stuff until we got hardware, you know, the PS4. And then I specifically remember when we started learning about PBR, that was actually a huge challenge for us because, you know, like I was a hand painted artist, like, from Torchlight to Uncharted 3, we still did hand painting, even though like Uncharted was a semi-realistic looking game. If you look at it now, it's very cartoony looking because of the lighting models and the textures have like shadows baked in and stuff. But we were proud of it at the time. But that was huge because we were like, well, how do we even figure this stuff out? Like, we were using, you know, material systems that we're using for like car simulations and like the Disney model. And we were like, what does this mean? You know, like, are all of us traditional artists totally doomed? You know, like, I was never great in math or science, so I thought I was totally screwed. But, you know, we had some great technical artists that sort of onboarded us. And I specifically remember people from like Ready at Dawn and Sony Santa Monica had come to our studio and showed us stuff that they were already like maybe a year or two ahead of us on. Like, they were showing us their materials, the results of like masking, you know, layered materials, and just how amazing it can look. You know, it was really exciting as an artist to kind of learn that stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember specifically, like, the Order, the team working on the Order at Ready at Dawn, were just so far ahead of all of us. Like Tate, my material lead, who's now back, actually just went back as an art director. He's my art director on Lost Legacy. Him and I went to E3, like, in 2014 or 15, and we were watching a talk from Ready at Dawn, and that really sort of brought into perspective, like, how you could sort of prepare things for the physically based lighting model, the results you can get. Because I mean, that game still looks outstanding, and that was definitely a huge inspiration for Uncharted 4.
Well,
Yeah, it
Uncharted
was a big
4
challenge.
still looks better than a lot of PS5 games,
I
if we're being
mean, we had
honest.
a killer team. We had an insane team. Awesome people, really talented folks. It was a huge learning curve. Like, we did so much look dev and so much going back to the drawing board because it was so different. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest jumps in games for as far back as I can remember. Since, like, like, you went from, like, 2D to 3D, because, like,
Yeah.
physical lighting model is so different from what you had before that, where it's like, even on Uncharted 3, like, one example is, like, you would duplicate your materials for each level. So because you would light them, and because it wasn't a physical model, it was doing it strictly based on each in particular material settings. So you couldn't reuse the same materials and have it look good in every level, because of the nature of the lighting. Like, it wasn't reflecting correctly, it wasn't, like, bouncing light, stuff like that. So you would have to sort of redo a lot of stuff. But now, like, with physical models, you can make a grass that's physically correct based on real life, colors and translucency settings, and it'll work in any setting, dark, light scenes, sci-fi environment, doesn't really matter. It saves you a lot of time in the end after that massive investment, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But do you have to physically go out and get reference material, or do you just go off Google to kind of get an idea?
Well, the problem with Google is you don't know, like, for example, every camera, even, like, your phone or even standard cameras have, like, settings preset. Like, you have to disable that. So, like, you don't know if that green or that color is particularly correct, is physically correct. You need to make sure there aren't any shadows. It needs to be, like, an overcast day. This was early, so, like, it was really hard for us to find this information. Like, we obviously talked to our peers, like Sony Santa Monica, Ready at Dawn, other studios that were doing, I think Guerrilla also had some input. Stuff that they had scanned, proper material and texture, BRDF settings. But we actually went out and we got, like, we found, like, some plants and stuff, and we took them in and scanned a lot of those ourselves because we didn't have all that information. I remember
Ah.
specifically we went out to, like, the water gardens on, like, a field trip, like, Waylon, Brink, Tate, myself, and a few other people went out and just gathered plants, and we went and scanned those. So we had them for ourselves, Part of what we were doing there too is, for example, we were even taking, like, a light box, like you do for, like, 2D animation, and we would put a leaf on there and we would see how the light transmits through, so we knew, how to do, like, thin wall translucency for, like, light passing through leaves. So we could show this to, like, programmers, and so they can kind of give us basic tech that then we could, like, make materials that would give us similar results. Yeah.
That's smart. That's smart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny because, like, in the end, Uncharted compared to Last of Us, we're a little bit willy-nilly with colors. Like, we like to push it really far. So it was good that we started with a solid foundation of correct, settings for, like, grasses and plants and other materials. But we were able to push them, within our direction, like, rule set. So, like, it was, like, sort of like you had a foundation that was solid and you could push it from there. Yeah. And then you could reuse those with a less pushed color palette for, like, Last of Us, you know what I mean? And not make it stand out or look too stylized.
Yeah, well, the color palette of Uncharted, it pops more than, say, Last of Us, right?
Yeah, it's really saturated compared to Last of Us.
Yeah. And obviously you did a lot of the greenery stuff. So is that
Yeah,
just
I mean, we had a lot of people, but
pushing up the
I
saturation?
definitely, yeah, I got to do a lot of stuff on that was super fun. A lot of sculpting. We were looking at painters and stuff like that for inspiration. Like, a lot of Ghibli painters, like Kazuo Oga. And we even looked at Caravaggio for, like, how far to push stuff. It was way out there, like, but once again, my art director at the time, Tate, he's a traditional painter. And we were like, well, what is an Uncharted 4 jungle look like, you know, because we know what we can do in three, and we didn't 100% know what we were doing for four at the time. We were like, is this going to be more stylized? Is it going to be more realistic? In the end, it was kind of like a hyper realistic game, you know. It's like not Last of Us, but it's definitely pushed a bit further, if you know what I mean. So we were looking at ways we can kind of accentuate certain shapes and colors with our foliage and with just general art in the game. So yeah, we used a lot of references like that, like traditional painting and stuff.
What's your view on ray tracing? Because obviously that's the big thing these days, and there's some people that seem to think that it's good because it saves artists a lot of time. But whether it's as good as baked lighting, I'm curious for what your thoughts are on that.
Honestly, you know, like I was trying to think about what it was about Uncharted 2 that looked so good that made me want to go there. And it was the lighters. It was lighting. It was Naughty Dog was one of the first places to have a devoted lighting team. So I would say like when I went there, I was just blown away by like how much the lighting helped things, you know, like in terms of like, oh, sorry about that. Let me mute my phone.
That's all right.
In terms of like how far you can push an environment, which is a basic lighting pass. Even still, like, you know, like I'll do a lighting pass with real time, you know, Lumen currently we're using Unreal. But, you know, Naughty Dog uses their own proprietary engine, but it is a baked lighting setup, at least what we were using before. Problem there is that I think you can get maybe.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with two times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
The best results with a baked setup personally, but the iteration time is really long. Like on Uncharted 4, we would get like these bakes that would take hours to do. So even if I changed like UV maps for like a ground texture, it would break the lighting in the level. So like that particular wall or whatever was attached to that UV would be broken. It'd be like this giant black like stretched shadow. And it broke it for everybody because it was like it was a sort of like a baking setup that would share like a portion of each machine on the network, something like that, and then it would sort of bake and save for everybody. So if you broke it, it was broken for everybody until it was rebaked, essentially. And even on like I remember the cathedral for Uncharted 4, like towards the end of production on that, when we were trying to ship that level, like I was literally painting like little lighting artifacts out of the light map, like. The lighting artist was doing the best he could. Like it was an amazing like atmosphere, but we would get this weird, you know, like light leak somewhere where it's just like a basically like a glowing pixel just off somewhere on like a wall. And when you play it, it would just stand out. So we'd have to go into Photoshop, not bake it again once we were happy, you know, like not change anything because it would rework the light map a little bit. So once it's done, we would go through and paint those out. So that was a pain in the butt. I don't miss that at all.
So that problem has largely been mitigated now, do you think? Or would
You know
that
what's
still be an
funny? On my
ongoing
current
problem?
project, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, do you think that would be an ongoing problem?
I have noticed Lumen has light leaks as well, and I'm not as clear how to fix those. Like, so we're still figuring that out because it's new tech. Like, I actually thought it was all good, and I think it's amazing. Like, in terms of iteration, it's awesome. I throw a piece into the environment, and it just looks good for the most part. That saves a ton of time and iteration. Like if the art director says this needs to move back or this needs to be adjusted, you could do it real time and you could all look at it together as opposed to before where you move it and then come back in 2 hours or the next day or two or whatever and look at it. So iteration's way faster. Some of the stuff we're doing right now, I did notice we had an extremely complex structure with something underneath that had like a lot of particles. And for some reason it was creating this weird light bounce that would like create this weird shimmering effect in the upper area, and we were looking at ways to like block that, and we've mostly mitigated it, but it's not perfect either. Like every method has its sort of shortcomings, and this might just be because it's early still, if that makes sense. You know, Lumen and Nanite and stuff. It's only been like a year or two, so.
Yeah, I mean, art has become the most expensive part of the production pipeline now, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Do you think there are any tools or if AI can help mitigate some of the problem? Or do you just think that it's just going to keep ballooning?
You know, it's funny because, like, I'll admit AI can be really impressive. Like, I remember my first experience with Midjourney. I didn't know what it was or anything, but I was on Twitter and a friend of mine was using it, who's a concept artist, and he was making, like, these trash bag monsters, and they were just insane. Like, you know, because he does horror stuff. His name's Mike Francina. He did some really cool stuff. I don't think he uses AI anymore now that we know kind of, like, you know, it kind of scrapes some of the art from the industry. It's more of an ethical question whether over a quality question. So it's up to each individual artist how they feel about it. I've seen that stuff come super far. I've even seen some of our tech artists like do materials with it, which are just like, that would take me, I don't know, like days to get the same results just to do it in Substance. You know, you could do it in ZBrush, like a sculpt of like a bust or something, and then bring in a height map, almost using it to create height maps. So it is no question going to be part of the pipeline for sure. Personally, you know, my wife, for example, is an illustrator. And so I just ethically can't use AI stuff, just knowing that they don't always know where a lot of this stuff comes from. I did read an article about the guy who did a lot of Shin Megami Tensei concept art. I forgot his name, but he's done like thousands of illustrations. And apparently, you know, he's older now, so I think he's borderline, like, you know, I know a lot of these artists that get older, like some of it's literally a physical challenge for them. Like their joints hurt, or they just, their neck hurts when they work and stuff. So he just feeds it his own work. So it gives him feedback of his own illustrations, but different. It's completely a closed system. And he's been feeding it his own illustrations from the past, I don't know, 30 or 40 years. And he's been getting crazy concepts from that, which in that case, I don't really know what the problem is, as long as you know 100% where everything's coming from. I thought that was kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I suppose it's
haven't seen the results, but he apparently they're come up with interesting things in that regard.
I suppose that's the thing with any new technology, right? There's people that will use it for good and others that will use it for nefarious purposes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I think part of me wonders, I'm like, could part of it be used to maybe remove some of the monotonous stuff maybe that an artist has to deal with to free them up to do other stuff that benefits the product overall? But
I'm assuming that's going to be the case for some things. Like one of my leads split off from Nighthawk. I forgot the name of his studio. His name is Maximov, and he started a studio that basically, he has an artist that places props throughout the environment, like little minutia, like, you know, you look at like Last of Us, and we place like every little piece of paper, we place like little crayons on there, stuff like that, you know, on the desk. And it just, that's like, I don't know how many hours worth of work doing stuff like that, that's seen for like a split second. So he's trying to train a model to just place props, essentially, like prop up a room with like an asset library that you have internally. You know, like, for example, like Naughty Dog, we have our own asset library because we made so many games, you know, like you just build this massive library that you can make rooms out of, you can make foliage out of, stuff like that. So he's finding ways to sort of populate like in environments with AI. I have no idea how that's going. That was something he was pushing back in like, I don't know, like 2017 or 18. I don't know if it's successful or if it's even helpful, but, you know, in a way, it's almost kind of like, if it could become a tool kind of like a foliage paint or something like that in Unreal, where, you know, you have sort of like a palette you can work with, like when you make your grass and you make like your daffodils or whatever, and you just can adjust a few minor settings. Like, maybe this is a too dumb of an example in terms of like how simple the assets workflow is, but you just can then paint and easily paint down a bunch of stuff based on some simple rules. If it could do stuff like that, that could be kind of helpful, you know, but like with props, potentially, like populating with props, if that makes sense, just taking some of the hand placement out of day-to-day work.
Yeah, because it's all about working smarter, not harder. Well, yeah, you work hard and you work smart, but was there times, like say with Last of Us Part 2, that you'd reuse assets from Uncharted 4 in Last of Us Part 2, or was everything being made from scratch? Because I know with Rockstar, honestly, they reused GTA 5 art assets in Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess it would have to be very specific ones, because similar to that, you know, like Red Dead is such a period piece. Like, it would depend on whether it fit. And it was the same with Last of Us 2, I would say. It's you know, Uncharted, you could probably use some, like, the debris, a lot of, like, just the household items, stuff like that, especially for, like, the interior stuff that was really detailed, like, you know, a hairbrush, a mirror, you know, a painting, stuff like that that you just hang on the wall. So I think that, yeah, you could definitely reuse a lot of that stuff.
Because how did you find it? Because obviously Uncharted's art style is different to Last of Us. So when you transitioned to Last of Us Part 2, were you able to seamlessly get into it? Because obviously you've been working on one project for a long period of time, and then you moved to a new project. Sure. So there can be some, I suppose, time getting used to adapting to the different art style.
You know, it was funny because I had an interesting, I guess, introduction to the style. I was placed on a first playable for the press sequence. It was the sequence in Last of Us 2 where you ride up through a snowy environment. And it was very positive, happy moment before everything goes bad. I think actually it's kind of part of what maybe, I don't know if they had this section in the show or not. I haven't seen the series yet, but this would have taken place in a similar time frame. But like Ellie and Dean are riding horses through, like, checking radio stations. They're doing like a patrol, essentially, was the name. And we were just pushing the environments as far as possible. So a lot of it was like, you know, stuff already done on Uncharted. Like, it was natural landscapes, working with our particle teams to make some amazing, like, fake deformable snow. And a lot of that was like working with tech team too, that was doing all that software, like all the crazy tech, like deforming the snow. And I would say we were working on that for a few months. And then we got up to the point where we were doing like a little radio station at the top. And that was like such a simple little building that I was able to kind of get used to the style working with that building. Yeah. It wasn't like some massive cityscape at the time, you know, like that. We moved into stuff like that later on, but this was our first assignment.
Okay.
Moving from Uncharted to Last of Us 2.
Well, that's good. They didn't just chuck you in the deep end and be like, here you go.
Yeah, no. And I feel honored I get to work on that section, you know, because I love Last of Us 2. I'm really proud to have worked on it, but it's not the happiest game. It can be really bleak.
No,
you know?
No, not at all.
So it was cool getting to work on like a beautiful snowy environment, kind of a nice character moment, you know, between the two female leads and stuff. And that was cool.
Yeah. Is there a sense of pressure, though, when you're working on this stuff? Because obviously Naughty Dog is held up in such high regard, especially for like not only its storytelling but its art and animation. So is there a certain pressure there? Like Last of Us was very well received, and obviously Uncharted was as well, but is there a pressure there when you're working on it, like, oh my god, everyone is going to be like assessing everything?
Oh yeah, and,
yeah, no, critiquing every
little
thing.
It's funny because by the time I worked on that, I'd already been in that situation multiple times. Like, I worked pretty much every first showable. I worked on a bunch of stuff for Uncharted 3 that was shown to, like, either press or E3 stuff. Like, one of the first things I worked on at Naughty Dog that was shown that was, like, a big deal was, like, E3 playable in the jungle.
Yep.
That was a big one. And that was, like, probably the most pressure I felt because I had never done that at Naughty Dog before. And I was like, okay, this is a big deal. But it was really awesome collaboration. Like, it was a really great moment with the art team getting to kind of work together because, you know, you're helping each other out and you're pushing each other as artists. I would say internally you get so much pressure anyway, but a lot of them are your buddies anyway. So they'll just tell you at lunchtime, like, man, that's not looking good enough. Like, you should definitely push that further. You know, like, usually you know exactly how it's going to be received by the time it's shown to the public. So, and the thing is, by the time I was, you know, working on, like, the patrol section on Last of Us 2, I'd worked with these guys for, like, I don't know, eight or nine years by then. So you could tell how it was going. You could read the room. Like, okay, this is, we need to push this further. This just isn't high enough detail. Like, we literally start on a chunk of ice as the horse's hoof breaks. I don't know if you remember that sequence. So we were zoomed in way crazy close. We're like, this is insane, you know, but in the end, it was awesome. You know, like, we're really proud of it. It pushed the quality really far forward. And we have the tech, like, they even reused that similar tech on the Last of Us remake and a bunch of other stuff too. So, you know, like the snow deformation and all the crazy details from, like, the forests. And yeah, so it was worth the investment, if that makes sense. Once again, that was a huge effort. That wasn't all me. That was a bunch of us.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a solo effort. But is there a bit of a friendly rivalry there? Because obviously you look at your peers and you see what they're doing and that motivates you in a way like, oh, I need to up my game and
Make this for sure. Better. You can constantly look at like, okay, like, you know, Ruben's always like top tier or whatever, Brian or whoever, you know, your buddies, but also people you respect and look up to there. And you can look at what they're doing. You're like, oh, dang, the quality there, like the fidelity is so high. And then you start looking at your stuff and you're like, well, what am I missing here? And you can maybe add some more layers to your materials. Or maybe it's a matter of like how many decals or sort of environmental storytelling bits they put in, like just how everything flows together. Like we really try to make everything seamless. Actually, one of the biggest problems with the snowy section is we were trying to do like, you know, not AI, but like automated, you know, just snow generation.
Yeah.
But, you know, the problem, one thing I left out with AI sort of help is that everywhere I've worked so far, my art directors have been so specific. Like they've literally said, you know, like to character teams, like that nose hair is wrong. And AI is just not going to get you there unless it's like you burn the whole Amazon forest down to like generate that nose hair or whatever, you know, or you could just tell an artist that you trust to do it, you know, either way. For that case, you know, like for the snow, we tried to generate with, I think, Houdini, which I think is a lot better now. You know, just like the snow flows, which we started with that. But in the end, we had to hand stitch everything because whenever you have geometry meet and it has like a white material like snow that's translucent, you get like this sort of like shadowed edge, which snow doesn't generate in reality. It just piles up, right? So we had to like seamlessly hide all that either with a blend or just manually stitching all that together. So that's kind of an example of something where we tried to sort of automate it and we just sort of had to ultimately go through and just do it manually.
But you know how with Uncharted, you are able to get plants and use them as reference. You wouldn't really be able to do that with snow because it would melt by the time you brought it back, wouldn't you? So would that be a case where you just look at video footage or photos?
We looked at Red Dead. We looked at God of War. I also go to the
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com. /footballfuelpointsTC.
Mountains a lot. I'm a snowboarder and I have a lot of skier friends and snowboarder friends. We go to like Mammoth and Big Bear, like probably we were going about once a month, I would say. So we would take a lot of our own reference. Like a lot of the materials I created for that particular sequence, where I sort of captured when I was at Mammoth, like, you know, wind-blown snow, you know, snow transition to ice, transitioning into like dirt and rock sort of as it melts. Just looking at that stuff, sort of getting it from different angles, like how the glancing angle affects the reflectivity, and just sort of building up these materials based on that reference and just knowledge of getting out there.
yeah, fair enough. How was it working on The Last of Us Part 1, though, which was basically a remaster of the original game? Because you're basically redoing the art, but a lot of the time it would still have the same... Underneath, everything would still be the same, right? And would still have the same collision and everything. So you're basically just painting over the top of it.
You know, it's funny because I don't know if you could say, like some games that they've remastered, you can literally switch between the two, which is amazing, in my opinion. I forgot what game it was, but one of them you could, and it's really impressive. It might have been, I forgot which game it was. For that, they might have taken some liberties. If things might be slightly nudged. They might be slightly rounder. They might be slightly offset, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's close enough that it would be like, you know, I don't think anybody would notice unless it was literally on top of the other geometry. And because it was a new, like, our lighting model and everything had changed, like, our materials all had to be rebuilt. The geometry needed to be rebuilt. I worked on that for maybe 1.5-2 years before I left. I was given, for example, the State House in Boston, I believe. And a lot of that was, you know, work that multiple artists worked on, like my lead Todd and Malcolm, and those guys have been there forever as well. So I was able to just go ask them what their intent was for this stuff, if it was too low res or if it wasn't available anymore. A lot of it was, and then I worked with a guy named David Budlong, who had worked at Ready at Dawn. So he'd done a ton of like really amazing modeling and stuff. He had a lot of experience with this stuff, sort of up-resing and making high-res, sort of like interior Capitol building style architecture. And then I was just retexturing all that from scratch. I would say the biggest challenge is just trying to capture the feeling of the original game, because the original game had blacks. It had really dark sequences and stuff. And with our lighting, we try to get away from like lighting that was so dark or that used blacks in it and stuff like that. We try to do a lot more of it with just the atmosphere and the bounce lights to kind of achieve a similar feel. In the end, I had left, so I wasn't there for the final work. I think a guy named Jonathan had finished it with Bud Long and maybe a few other people. I would say the biggest challenge...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go. This is all interesting.
I would say the biggest challenge that I understood is that, you know, like, there is an artist that I'd worked with there the whole time I was there. He's a personal friend of mine that had made, like, a record shop in Billstown. And he passed away, actually. So the biggest problem with remasters, remakes, is trying to not, like, basically erase the history of that. You know, Last of Us is such a cherished game, and that's something he was very proud of. They even had, like... You know, he was a musician before being a game developer. They even had like his posters up, like his album covers and stuff. But when I went through playing the final game after having already left Naughty Dog, I was like wondering, what are they going to do with that space? Like, are they going to honor him in some way? Or are they going to like just erase all the work he had done? But there actually was a callback to that. Like, there was sort of like a little shrine in the back I noticed, sort of like referencing his contribution, which I really appreciated.
That's cool. So
they didn't like... You know, because like when you remake something, like, you do lose some of the original creators. And that's something I was really trying not to do when I was working on those spaces, be respectful of that.
Well, yeah, in some ways I would think it would be harder than creating something from scratch, because you
yeah.
have to make it look like people's memories of it, even though that it's not
yeah.
really like that, while still paying homage to the people that worked on it prior. So
yeah. Some of the games that really blew me away recently was Blue Point's work on, like, Demon's Souls.
Yeah.
Like, that seemed like an impossible task. And then, like, the Suikoden remastered, stuff like that. Like, they redid those games. And I was like, this is just, like, just asking to get burned redoing these, like, classics, you know? Like, but it seems like they've all gone pretty well. And, of course, Silent Hill 2 Remake was an amazing job, and Resident Evil 4. It's actually a really amazing time for remakes and remasters.
Well, that seems to be the big thing. And I suppose in some
yeah.
ways... it helps, maybe, because it would be less costly or less of a risk to these studios, because
yeah.
obviously the cost of development's ballooning, so maybe it's a safe bet.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of studios also, they'll do stuff like that to keep the team employed while they develop or even think about what the next major IP or project is, because it's like you if you go down the wrong path and you're like building the IP for the next 10-20 years and it's not the right call, you know, like, you could totally screw a studio over. So instead they're like, well, what can we do to keep these people occupied? You know, part of that at Naughty Dog, when we were working on Lost Legacy, was that Neil and those guys were still figuring out all the nuts and bolts for Last of Us 2. Like, they were already, there was actually like a side team working on a ton of Last of Us 2 stuff. And then, you know, for example, Tate Meyer, director, and then most of the Uncharted people after 4, we went on to do the DLC, which just ballooned. Because it was supposed to just be like a side thing, if you recall.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
People had purchased that with as like some crazy collector's edition of Uncharted 4, and I think they got that with it, even though it was essentially a whole new game. And part of that was just keeping the art team occupied while they developed the other IP.
Yeah, did
yeah.
you actually get to interact with Neil much, or was he kind of like this force that was hidden behind like an invisible force field?
You know, it's, I think due to the time that I started, I got to interact with Bruce and Neil a bit, but I was definitely, you know, they had been there for a long time,
yeah,
and
yeah.
they were really high level. I talked to Neil a little bit in the elevators and stuff, and he'd just say, oh, what do you think about this? And I think he just said that to most of the developers, you know, just see what people thought, like, oh, this seems good or bad or whatever. Yeah, it was cool. Not a whole lot, but other than that, to be honest.
Yeah. What would be the IP you'd love to work on?
I'm trying to think. I mean, probably a Zelda game.
Would you want it to have stylized graphics or realistic graphics?
You know, it's funny because I recently watched the reveal for like Wind Waker 2 or Wind Waker 1 coming out on the
Game,
Switch
yeah,
online
GameCube.
store.
Yeah.
And I watched the reveal for the Switch 2, and I was most excited just to replay that game. So I don't know. Honestly, something along those lines probably.
Well, I think the thing is with Wind Waker is because it's highly stylized, it still
Yeah.
looks good. Like, I mean, when did it come out? Like 2003 or something?
I was in college. Yeah, it was like 2003 or four.
Yeah.
And even then, I loved it. I wasn't as sold on it as I am now, but I was like, this is super cool, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the thing with stylized games, right? They tend to age better than realistic
Yeah.
games. With realistic games,
Yeah.
and a lot of the remasters and remakes you're seeing are because the realistic graphics look a bit dated now, so you have to update them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this isn't like a critique of like modern game developers or designers, and it is hard to come up with new game design, but a lot of those games set the foundation for like the path we've gone down for the past 20 years.
Yep.
Like you look at Resident Evil 4, that was Mikami essentially, and a few other people, I think, and even maybe Kamiya. There's a couple people that developed that game,
Yeah.
and that sort of inspired Gears of War, inspired Uncharted, inspired all these different things due to like, because they said Gears of War was inspired by Resident Evil 4. At least I recall them saying
Yeah.
that over the shoulder. And then they had the cover-based shooting, which then sort of inspired Uncharted, which of course was also inspired by Tomb Raider. So it's just like this layering of just, this original foundational well of like amazing designers and developers. And that of course includes like the Zelda team and the Mario team and all those guys, the Tomb Raider team, back
Yeah.
from like the 90s and 2000s, essentially.
I spoke to Sean Layden a while back, and he was talking about how game development has essentially doubled every generation. So it's getting to the
Yeah.
point now where you've got diminishing returns. I mean,
Oh,
how much,
yeah.
how realistic is it to push graphics more and more and more? Like, is it
It's
really
an
worth
arms
it?
race, to be honest,
Yeah.
because, like on my free time, I play a lot of like PS1 style indie games on Steam.
Oh,
Like
nice.
I loved Signalis. I'm playing a game called Fly Knight, which is a sort of a really weird knoff of Kingsfield. I love the old school Resident Evil 1 games. I finally played Dino Crisis PS1, which I had missed. And those games are amazing. They're so good. They're so like they're like this clockwork system of design and art. Like it's really impressive playing through them. Like how much they had to really have their thing their it's like the game design was more figured out than the story or anything else. Like the stories are usually just a mess in those games. It doesn't really matter. And now I feel like you've gotten more story, more art, versus before it was more mechanics and more design because the art and the story was really difficult to do because you couldn't do long cutscenes and you couldn't really show that much for, just couldn't render it. So I feel like it's sort of shifted, or people that try to do both, it's just the game's gonna take like 5, 6 years to make, plus.
Well, you can't do everything, right? So you kind of have to
Yep.
pick where your priorities are. And
Yeah.
I kind of feel more with Japanese developers, they might focus more on game design,
Oh
whereas
yeah, I
world
think so.
building storytelling might be more westernized, like the whole Hollywood influence in there. And I suppose it
Yeah.
depends on what resonates with you more. But it is, yeah, it's getting insane how these AAA games are taking like, what, 5 to 7 years to make.
Yeah, and that actually reminded me too. I would love to work on a FromSoft game because those games are, I feel like now they're artistically amazing too. They always had a lot of really amazing charm, but like technically, like you play like Dark Souls 1 and 2, like there's some art stuff that's a little funky in there. But now, ever since like Sekiro and like Bloodborne, I would say from there, like the art's also there. So they're like these amazing games. It's like hard to believe that they can pump them out so fast,
Yeah. Are you going to play GTA 6?
It's funny because I knew some people that worked on it. I loved 5, and my wife and I both agree that Red Dead Redemption 2 is maybe one of our favorite games of all time.
Good
That game's
choice.
a masterpiece. The art, the environments, the when the music hits just at the right moment, like that last song when Arthur's riding in the camp before the end of the game is just like it's pure cinema. It's like
It is,
amazing,
yeah.
It reminds me why I play video games still, Yeah, I mean, I'm in my 40s, so And it also reminds you why you make video games, because you can make these amazing experiences that really leave an effect on people. So I think I will eventually, but I'm not in a huge hurry. I've actually, because of working on games for over 20 years now, and a lot of it being super high detail AAA, I've got like a Super Nintendo set up over here, and I've been playing games I missed when I was younger,
Oh, nice.
and PlayStation 1, stuff like that. So I'll probably play it eventually, but it's not highest priority for me. I'm sure it'll be amazing though.
Yeah, because I would think, I mean, I'm trying to put myself in your shoes here, but if I was playing a game, given your background, I would inevitably end up putting on my hat and like start critiquing stuff, especially art, because obviously that's your domain. Yeah.
No. I mean, in that regard, I'll definitely play it. Like, I would say Re Silent Hill 2 Remake took me an extra third of the time to play because I'm just taking screenshots or I'm analyzing stuff, right? Like, that's the problem with playing these games, is it's not like that game maybe isn't a relaxing experience ever. It's not really supposed to be due to the story, like a Silent Hill game. But, for a lot of games where you are just sort of enjoying the gameplay, trying to analyze the art, stuff like that, a lot of it is trying to break down how they're doing stuff, and you just can't help as a developer kind of looking at something and trying to break it down. I mean, I enjoy that a lot actually, but it is a little exhausting, if that makes sense, when you work like a full shift at work and then you're playing a game, at night, but then it's also a stressful game, but also gorgeous. So you're sort of looking at the art and breaking it down.
Well, you're probably still in work mode, aren't you? Because
Yeah,
you're
that's the
kind of
problem actually. Like,
mentally
e
breaking it down.
even like, I was at the right age when Final Fantasy VII came out. I was like 12 or 13, so of course it's one of my favorite games of all time as well. So having the remake come out was amazing for me. I actually didn't play it for years though, because like during it came out during the pandemic, and
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
like in my mind, I always knew there would be a remake somehow, even since I was a kid. And the fact it came out in a really weird, bleak time in history, I was like, I don't really want to associate it with that. So I took a little bit of
Fair enough.
time and I waited for things to get maybe at least show that, okay, we are going to make it out of this. We're going to come through this whole situation. Because at first we had no idea, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But even that, like, once I got through that phase of it, I was like just analyzing everything. You know what I
That
mean?
must suck
So I
in a
was
way.
like, because I was thinking about how they had taken these 2D rendered backgrounds and translated Midgar into this 3D environment. Relative, I think they did an amazing job because it really filled in my mind. It fit what my mind imagined when I was a kid, if that makes sense. Which, coming at it from that perspective, being like more of a fan than a developer originally, and taking it now with a developer mindset, still a fan, it did match a lot of what I imagined, which is really satisfying. And that's what like I would say every developer tries to strive for that when they work on a game, especially like a remake, I would assume.
Yeah, well, once again, you fall. I mean, with that, you're essentially, it is essentially a new game in a way, because it's,
Very much so, yeah.
yeah, because it's such a drastic contrast compared to the original, as opposed to something
Yeah.
like Last of Us compared to the remake, which is
It's
essentially everything is still fundamentally the same.
the nostalgia that just ties it all together.
Yeah, that's right. Nostalgia is
Those
a powerful
moments.
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the
Yeah.
glue that binds it all.
So I had a few questions from the community that
Sure.
I was going to run past you. Maybe you can answer them. Maybe you cannot. Maybe you'll be like, no comment. We'll see how we go. So this
Sounds
one's
good.
from Romeo. He says here, a unique component to working on or working as an artist in games is working with the gameplay and level designers to realize and contribute to a shared vision. How is the process of collaborating with the designer on a level to sculpt the gray box?
Yeah, so it depends on the studio. For example, at Giant Skull, I'm working with a designer who worked with a really good friend of mine. So we already, even before I started, we already had a good connection because my friend vouched for me, who is the lead designer. So this guy trusted me from the beginning, which I really cherish, obviously, because it's hard to build that trust. So I
Yeah.
came into, for example, Giant Skull with the designer trusting me already. When I started at Naughty Dog, it was a mixed bag, because they didn't really know who you are. Once again, I'm a material guy. I wasn't a modeler. I actually was a good modeler, I would say. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I took the modeling test, and my lead actually said that I could have been a modeler, but then they said you could do texturing or modeling. So I chose texturing. So that being said, the model I worked with, Adam, was just outstanding. Like, he was way better than me. But so he, like, him and I would talk about these things. Ultimately, he would have that back and forth at Naughty Dog when I was there, because I was an environment artist first, specializing in materials. So I didn't work as much with, like, say, making the wall, for example. I would texture the wall, right? So it was more like they would do the feedback. But a lot of time, us as a team, like Adam and myself, would go to the designer and say, hey, is it possible to tweak this or that? Or I might still say, like, hey, Adam, we should tweak this because I just think it would look better this way. And we just discuss it as a team. Usually it's a really great, trusting sort of trio. It's like the Triforce. You've got a design, texture artist, and modeler. And then that's sort of like the team that the leads and the art directors will say, hey, go make this level. You go make that level, and you'll just work on your teams, and you'll go see what those guys are doing. And a lot of it too is like talking to people that have been there for a long time. Like, hey, is this designer open to sort of feedback or opinions, or are they really like just texture this box? And sometimes it's literally like texture this box, like put a texture on it. And you'll see those moments in the game when you play Last of Us and Uncharted. You will see obviously somebody's like, this is a box with a texture on it, and there's just no getting around that. Sometimes there's a design constraints, so like an animation. Or like for multiplayer maps, we would do for like the Uncharted games and the Last of Us 1 game. It was like literally readability or distance, you know, for like snipers, stuff like that. But yeah, usually it sort of depends on the team. And, you know, we would work on three or four different environments per game. You know, like Uncharted, I'd work on three or four. Or Last of Us, I'd work on three or four. And it really just depended on a couple things. One being that if the designer trusted you or not, or agreed with your opinions in general. And second, how strict that environment was. Like if it was really technically expensive, or if it had like a lot of technical constraints, like for animation or design reasons, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I would think one of the cool things about being an artist is you would probably get to, over time, get more experience with design. Like it would be easier for an artist to become a designer than a designer to become an artist.
I mean, there's a lot of information for how to make art these days, which is awesome. But I did learn a ton working with designers, and I worked with great designers. Like even I remember Bruce Straley, who's game director on Uncharted 4 and I believe Last of Us 1. I remember we had a disagreement because we were really up to the wire on like one of the end levels of Uncharted 4. And we were like, this is like a really huge level. Do we really need all this stuff? You know, it was a sequence in the river where you're with Elena. And it's like this falling water. There's like a river. There's like the Jeep. There's like snipers and combat. And he was like, well, this is the only option we have to sort of combine all these systems together. And so the fact he came over, which was awesome, he could have just said no. We were just like, hey, is it possible for us to cut this down? You know, because it's a huge level and we're already really slammed. And the fact he came over and explained to me from a design perspective of why it would be really important to have in the game, you know, like a lot of these levels are ways to introduce this sort of combat mixed with this sort of traversal mixed with this sort of enemy or stuff like that. And this was a specific case like that. So having that clarified for me was really enlightening in a way. It was, first of all, it was really awesome as an artist to have the designer, particularly the game director, come over and talk to us about it and why it was important, because just feels good to have that sort of communication with them. And second of all, you just learn a ton. You start thinking about things in that way, like, oh, well, this makes sense. And you know, you just start thinking about things as a designer, and that actually makes things easier down the line because you already kind of know what sort of things they're gonna say yes on and maybe say no on, so you know kind of where you can budge on stuff like that.
That's a really important point that's probably somewhat lost in AAA games now, because the teams are so large that everything gets siloed. So there's not as much communication happening between, say,
yeah, you just get a yes or no.
Yeah, and it's like, well, why? You know.
But he came over and chatted with us, which was awesome. It was just Adam and myself, and he was like, "Oh, we could cut it, but this is a really valuable thing we think for the game." And in the end, we think it turned out cool, so it was worth it.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. All right. Next question from Kraken 4566. What was your favorite environment to design? They haven't specified what game, so I'm guessing just overall.
Trying to think. I mean, honestly, like, you know, getting to work on the Torchlight games was cool because I was like the only environment artist on that game. And we made that game in about a year. So getting to work on that game and then the beginnings of Torchlight 2 was awesome. Because it was like, I was working with the Diablo creators, like Max and Eric Schaefer, those guys, which I'd worked with at Flagship, you know, before that. But they basically said, I don't know, here's what we're thinking, like, make, like, underwater city here, make, like, this lava level here, make, you know, this town there, and just go for it. I mean, that was really cool, because it really pushed me to, because it was a randomly generated dungeon, to really think about it as a designer as well, if that makes sense, and how to break these things up visually and gameplay wise. That might be too old of a reference, I'm not sure. In terms of Uncharted, I mean, I loved working on the city, and I loved getting to work on the end of Uncharted 3. That was really rewarding for me because I thought that Shambhala in 2 was the top tier. I still think it's one of the coolest Lost Civilizations in games. Like, some of my favorite artists worked on that at Naughty Dog, a lot of the guys I looked up to when I joined there. So I would constantly look at their work and try to, like, reach for that. I think in the end, it still... We weren't 100% happy with how it turned out. Like, I think it didn't reach that high, but we still were really proud of what we worked on, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. This is the last question. You kind of covered this, but it's from Adventure Sing Game Development. Do you ever feel the desire to work on stylized environments rather than realistic, such as Naughty Dog's older titles, Jak and Daxter, Crash Bandicoot, etc.?
Honestly, like, I mean, like you said, do we ever talk to people like Neil and them? At one point I pitched him, like, we should do like this stylized game. We should do this and that. He just nodded his head and smiled, you know, like I would love it if like to get to work on like a, something like that, like a Ghibli style game or.
Cause
or
I know whatever, you're a fan. You know? Yeah. Of Kazuha.
Oh yeah. No, that would be a Kazuha's dream for me.
Paintings and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I am trying to get into hobbyist design. Like I've been learning blueprints and stuff so that down the line I could potentially try to make something myself or just as a hobby. You know, I'm not trying to make a second job for myself or anything. This is just something I would do for fun and it uses a different part of my brain. So I might start dabbling in my own fun sort of things, you know, off work. Potentially. Yeah.
I suppose with stylized, art as well, you don't have as much geometric detail, or you don't need to have as much geometric detail, do you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, for example, like, what I'm working on now, you can imagine, like, every little blade of grass on a moss or whatever, you know, on a rock, like, you'd see all that stuff. But, you know, for a Ghibli game or a Ghibli style, a lot of what makes that stuff so amazing is what they emit or how they simplify shapes and colors, like, you know what I mean? A mossy rock would just have like, you know, you'd have the sort of the blend from like the rock material or like the colors to like some of the foliage or moss on top, but you wouldn't have every single blade rendered. It just wouldn't look good. It would look like a mess essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Is there any stylized game that's come out in the last few years that you've just been like, oh my God, this looks amazing?
I know there's an answer to that question. I play a lot of games, actually, but I don't know what it would be. I mean, I am working on Tears of the Kingdom still, which is excellent. I would say technically it has a lot of problems, but overall, visually, it's really nice.
Well, the Switch 2 version will probably get remove a lot of those problems because it's like 60 4K.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But even there, like some of the materials are a little muddy. Like, you know what I mean? Like some of the colors, I really love those games. I'm not trying to talk down on them, but compared to like even like Ocarina for what it did for its time, like how colorful and vibrant it was, even though it was simple graphics or Wind Waker.
Yeah.
You know, like those games, you know, I think they'll still hold up even better down the line. Although I do think it looks great still. So,
I think with that type of game, I think to me it looks like a lot of the investment of time went into the physics, the physics of Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
Because all the stuff you can do with the building and everything, it's like, how does this even work?
I think I am being a little overly critical, being a material artist at Naughty Dog for 11 years.
That's fine.
You know, I look at some of the rocks on the ground and stuff, and I'm like, you know, you look at, for example, some of the Ghibli background painters, and they could have looked a little closer to some of what they're doing there. And I feel like if you brought that, it would have been like, I mean, it's still a masterpiece, but it would have been even nicer, in my opinion. Even if it's just a flat ground, you could do a lot with that sometimes with the right materials and colors.
Yeah. And look, I agree with you 100%. Some of the art at times when I played it, I was like, that doesn't look that great. But
overall, it's amazing, though. It looks great. That's what really matters, though, is the overall. It looks excellent. So
yeah. Cool, man. Well, hey, I know you're a busy guy, so I'll wrap up there. Before I let you go, though, if anyone wants to keep up to date with what you're doing, where's the best place for them to do that?
Let me check. I have a Blue Sky.
You got rid of Twitter.
Yeah, I got rid of Twitter.
It's a cesspit, so I understand.
Yeah, it was just real negative. I'm trying to enjoy Blue Sky. It's just jeremyhuxley.bluesky.
Cool.
And that's pretty much it. I don't have Facebook or anything. I have it on my ArtStation account.
Which is sick, by the way. I highly recommend that people check it out. You got a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah, it's a mix. I actually had to cut down because it's funny. You know, even if you're proud of something you worked on, it's not always the best thing for your portfolio. You know, there's a lot of things that I've worked on. Well, you know, it's just good to... That's part of, you know, like when a recruiter's looking at your stuff or whatever, which not to say I'm looking or anything, but it's good to also pare down your own stuff because they'll be like, this is cool, but like, why is this in there? Is this something you want to do? Or like, you know, compared to other things, it might not be at the same caliber. That's part of working on a portfolio is knowing what things to show and what things to omit, even if you're really proud of them. It's almost like you just need like a little side tab, like, hey, here's some other stuff I did, you know, just for information or whatever.
Yeah,
even my Uncharted 3 stuff is still is too old really to be up there, but I put it up there anyway because I just don't care right now. So, it was, you know, it's a lot of good memories and stuff.
Well, I mean, the fact that you worked at Naughty Dog is already a pretty much a mic drop. I mean, I would imagine people would pay attention just because you worked at Naughty Dog.
You know, yeah, that place is an institution. It's got its goods and its bads, but overall, it was such an amazing experience. I learned a ton. Like, I never could have gotten to where I'm at in my career or as an artist without going there.
Yeah.
You know, and working on the Uncharted games in particular were a huge honor for me. And I'm really proud of The Last of Us games. So,
well, you should be. They're still held up as like the benchmark. I mean, Last of Us Part 2 is still one of the best games out, just in terms of not only obviously the gameplay and stuff, but just from how it looks, because it still looks glorious, right? And yeah, and even there's like PS5 games and Xbox games that don't even look as good as it. So you guys are really pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, I mean, I had seen early pitches of, I think it's Interstellar is their new IP, right?
Oh, Intergalactic? I think it
Intergalactic,
is.
Intergalactic. Yeah. Interstellar is the film, I think.
Yep.
Now, I had seen original pitches for that. It's very different from what I thought it would be, but I'm really excited and proud of what they've shown. And I have a lot of friends there, so I'm really excited to see what that is. It's the first time I haven't known what's going on there since Uncharted 2. So it'll be for good. Me.
You can kind of approach it as a fan. So
yep, exactly.
Go in blind. Yep.
Yep, totally.
Cool. All right, well, that is the show, everyone. Make sure you share, like, and subscribe. And until next time, stay safe.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit Lowe's.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous US only.